Hi, everyone. Before we get started today, I just wanted to remind you about our partnership with FEE, the Foundation for Economic Education. Are you between the ages of 14 and 26? I sure hope so. That's the age group I'd really like to have listening to this show. If the answer is yes, you are eligible to apply for FEE's three-day seminars. They are going to be held across the United States, and they are designed to teach young people like you the power of economic thinking. FEE's three-day seminars offer opportunities to learn economic principles that can affect your career prospects, investment decisions, business strategies, and more. Seminar topics include economics of entrepreneurship and the economics of business success. So if you are between the ages of 14 and 26, please think about this opportunity to join students, successful business leaders, and great teachers in the discovery of the relationship between personal and social wealth, as well as the virtues of an enterprising life. The total tuition cost for the three-day seminar is $79. That includes all meals and housing. Tuition and travel reimbursement scholarships are available. There is no charge to apply. Applications are reviewed and accepted on a rolling basis. Apply today at fee.org/students and make sure you let them know in your application that you heard about this opportunity through the School Sucks podcast.
Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks Podcast 4.0. Hope you're having a good week. Today is January 13th. I'm so excited to welcome back Jake DeSillis to the show. It's been a while since Jake and I have collaborated. Jake was an important part of our last productivity series in 2013. He's back today, and we're going to be talking about the horizons of focus. This is a very, very, very important expansion of the two previous shows that I did with Nathan Frazier on setting and achieving goals. You will walk away from this conversation today with a much clearer understanding of how goal formulating, goal monitoring, and goal achieving processes fit into the bigger picture of getting things done. Now, this is something that you're going to hear me say over and over again throughout the month. In 2013, we use Getting Things Done and Evernote and an examination of productivity methods more generally as a way to get some damn control over what seemed like a very chaotic life of open loops and mismanaged time. In the first half of this month, as we revisit, update, and expand on this topic of productivity, we are talking more about that other part of getting things done, gaining perspective. And Jake was so incredibly helpful in the achievement of that goal in this episode that you're about to hear. So I'm excited to bring it to you. And as we move into the latter half of the month, we are going to focus down a little bit. Some new tools, perhaps some tool improvements or some strategic improvements based on lessons learned in the last couple of years of using this system. Before we start the show today, I wanted to mention some concerns expressed in the Facebook group. When I posted announcing Jake was going to be on the show to discuss horizons of focus, first comment from our old friend Bob, "I do wish I could get my head into the long term and out of year-to-year survival." And Amy followed up by saying what Bob said, "I have spent the majority of my life focusing on the shorter term, partly out of survival and partly, I think, because society trains us to look at the short term and avoid the reflection that would help us craft a meaningful plan toward our own purposes." In that same thread, Benjamin writes in, "Can you develop these kinds of goals or visions through abstraction? Or is it necessary to get into the activity of the goal and develop skills in this area before you can really conceive the goal itself? I'm thinking of Cal Newport's So Good They Can't Ignore You and how many people are easily frustrated because they're focused on some kind of abstraction of the finish line rather than developing the skills or knowledge or capital in a specific area, which is the thing that is really going to lead to success and achievement and make those higher level horizons of focus possible. So we are going to talk about that process from both the top down, in other words, starting with a vision and working down to specific actions. And we're also going to talk about it from the bottom up, when we find ourselves doing actions, sometimes just driven by desire, and how those actions can accumulate into projects and how those projects can add up to larger goals, and how through that ascension, we can find purpose. So all that is covered in the show today. I love this show. Jake will be back again before the end of the month, and I'll let Yinz know when that's going to happen. Yinz. All right, have a good day. Oh, by the way, check out Jake at thevoluntarylife.com. What a terrific resource. Here we go.
Used to ride the highway. I used to know where I was going. Now this shaded road is feeling cool beneath my feet. Used to ride on to get to where I was going in a day. Now I've got to stop, go and stop, go along the way.
Jake DeSellis, welcome back to School Sucks. It's great to have you back.
Thanks, Brett. Great to be back.
Yeah, it's been about a year since last show we did was actually for your podcast, The Voluntary Life, and it was on conformity and the six pillars of self-esteem. So yes. Considering that it's been some time, what's new with you? What's new with The Voluntary Life since we last spoke?
Oh, lots of things. I guess the biggest thing is that my wife Hannah and I have now left England and adopted a lifestyle of permanent slow travel. Mm-hmm. So we're now living in Panama and loving it here. So that's been a big change, you know, involving selling all our stuff and, you know, having a big reassessment about what we want to, how we want to live and where we want to be. And we've been here since August, really liking it. And we actually planned to stay here for a while and immediately do more travel, but we've decided to stick around here because we really enjoy Panama. And so that's been a lot of change on the personal front. And I've also just published a new book called Job Free, which is about different ways to quit the rat race and achieve financial freedom on your own terms. And so I'm very excited about that too. So yeah, lots of good stuff.
I have a feeling we might be talking again about that book sometime later this year. I would really enjoy that.
That would be great. I'd love that.
Awesome. So yeah, and the last time I think we spoke, you might have been in Mexico, correct?
Yes, I think so. Yeah. We've sort of slowly adopted this travel lifestyle. So we got into the process of going away for 6 months and then coming back to the UK for the summer. Mm-hmm. And then after a while, you know, we just realized that was great in many ways, but it also involved a lot of packing away our stuff and dealing with tenants in our apartment and, you know, having problems with tenants breaking things. And so we just decided, you know, we don't even want that hassle anymore. And so when we came back after our last trip to Mexico, we decided to sell everything. And that's also been the culmination of going minimalist for me. I now, all the possessions I own now fit into two bags.
Wow.
And so that's also, you know, it's been an interesting process in terms of productivity and thinking about what matters in life too, because that's been a really great way to remove a lot of trivial decisions from life and just not have stuff to look after that actually in the end interferes with you know, achieving my own highest purpose in life and the things that I want to do. So that's been a really interesting process.
Yeah, I think I felt like in the last year I went a little bit in the opposite direction. I built this pretty large production studio where I live. It has a bit of a grounding effect, if you know what I mean. And then the day comes in the state of New Hampshire, Jake, where you go outside and you slip on ice on your way to clear snow off your car. And you say, I don't know if this is the place for me long term, even though I've lived here most of my life. And then it becomes this question of, oh, well, goodness, how do I pack all this stuff and bring it to, say, Mexico That sounds nice. And that's just not an option. So it is a pretty significant lifestyle design shift that needs to take place.
Well, you know, we found that going up and spending 6 months abroad and then coming back was a nice way to test the waters and see, you know, is this actually going to be something that's going to work? And what I found is that I went away for 6 months and 7.5 months, and I just didn't miss all that stuff. And that was the real learning thing for me. It was like, okay, if you pack away all your crap and you don't miss any of it for more than half a year, then that tells you something about how important that stuff is to you, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting. I have a discussion later today. You know Kevin Kaskela?
I do.
We are going to talk a little bit about habits and productivity hacks this afternoon. And one of the questions that I had for him was, how do you maintain, you know, rituals or habits when your surroundings are always changing? You know, I find that if I go away for a weekend, my morning routine, if I'm not getting out of my bed and making my bed in the morning, my morning routine falls apart a little bit. So did you find as you adjusted to traveling that your, you know, systems for self-management and self-monitoring and productivity and organization suffered at all in that process?
There is definitely always an adjustment to your new circumstances and, you know, sort of finding your feet where you are. And I have little various hacks to kind of help me with that. But one of the things that I found is that as part of the process of going minimalist was just getting rid of all paper. So I'm totally paperless. I am also zero data in the sense that all my data is in the cloud. I do have local backups, but it's all encrypted in the cloud. So if somebody stole my laptop, it would be a real pain, but I would just start again with a new one, you know?
Right.
So we can move from place to place, and I still have access to all my systems because really everything lives on my laptop, my phone, and in the cloud. But it's still, nonetheless, you know, things like, you're absolutely right, things like morning routine are really important. And whenever you go to a new place, there is a kind of getting used to the local circumstances that it can still be hard.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I went to New York City for like a weekend in October, you know, and I mean, that's like 5 hours away from where I live. And I get up in the morning and I'm trying to, you know, start my day in a productive way. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, where do I get coffee? And I was in Brooklyn and I had to go on basically what felt like a safari, you know, looking for a cup of coffee that I was willing to drink. It was a very strange experience. So depending on where you are and how alien that location is to what you're used to, I think there's quite a bit of adjustment that needs to be done.
Totally.
But let me tell you about why we're here today.
Yes.
We did in 2013, in the summer of 2013, a series called Presence and Productivity, which was our introduction basically to the getting things done methodology of organization and productivity. You participated in the last episode in that series where you provided 8 tools for freeing your mind that helped with the getting things done process. I'm asking people now, I mean, we're spending the entire month of January, not just revisiting what we've done before, but also updating and expanding it. And at that time in 2013, because I was relatively new to getting things done, we talked about GTD mostly in terms of it being a tool for getting control of your life. Basically, you know, getting things out of your head, clearing the runway, to use the metaphor that we're going to be using throughout most of the show today, to essentially go to the next level in productivity, in organization, in project completion, and goal achievement. But GTD, as you've pointed out on The Voluntary Life, is also very much a tool about gaining perspective in your life, and that's what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, and for me, that is the most exciting and most fulfilling part of you know, my own productivity system, is getting perspective. That's, you know, this is where GTD really, it can make a big difference in terms of the whole direction of your life and achieving your purpose in life. And so I'm very happy to talk about it.
Yeah. So David Allen, and we talked about this in an earlier show about goals. He has basically come up with this metaphor of a runway with a plane taking off. And we touched on this in the past, back when we did the original series. But I wanted to just run through the steps, the altitudes or the horizons of focus one by one and talk about each a little bit.
Sure.
So the runway or lowest level is basically the day-to-day actions, things like items on a to-do list. Do you still use to-do lists?
Well, I now use an application called OmniFocus, which is a task management app, which is very much designed for GTD. And it's one of those apps that it has loads of features. And I avoided it for a long time because I kind of felt like I don't need a lot of this stuff. But now, because this is something that I do every day, I found that this app, because it's very customizable, it's scriptable, you can add in your own sort of special customized ways of using it. I found that that's the most helpful tool for me. So I do still have lists of actions, but those actions all sit within OmniFocus in projects. And I use that tool as a sort of framework for my own productivity.
Excellent. Yeah, I would actually like to learn more about this. I'm still using, just as I reported to you 2.5 years ago, I'm still using Evernote for everything. And I've started to, as I'm looking to, you know, update and improve this system, I'm wondering if that is the best tool. Is there a way that I could actually optimize? I mean, there always is a way. The answer to that question is obviously yes, but I haven't looked into ways of doing it yet. I'm very comfortable with Evernote. And whenever I get very comfortable, I start saying, if I'm this comfortable, there's probably a better way.
Well, it's interesting because I think this is what you're doing is a really good way of doing it, which is to, you know, rather than starting with some kind of super duper application and trying to work out what on earth it can do, you've started with Evernote, which is fairly simple, and you're building the system up, which means that you actually know what you're doing from the ground up. And I started on paper. You know, that was my first system. And so each time that I've changed the application that I've been using, it's because I've wanted to be more efficient, not because I thought this app is going to provide me with greater productivity. And there's a real temptation in that. You know, there's, in a way, it's like, a lot of people who write about productivity talk about productivity porn, which is like, you know, oh, look, there's a new app that can do great things. And this is going to make me so productive. And of course, it's very easy then to just spend a lot of time messing around, trying different tools, which doesn't actually help your productivity, you know. So I think it's great to increase your efficiency when you're ready to do that and to see, you know, to take it to the next level. But it's nice also to build it up from the ground up so that you're actually increasing your efficiency by taking on a new tool rather than just taking on a new tool as a hope that that will be your savior.
Right. And I think it really also comes down to having a full understanding of the method that you're using each tool for, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That takes us to the next level. And I'm going somewhere with how I'm explaining these altitudes. But the next level, what David Allen calls 10,000 feet, the plane taking off, is essentially current projects. Yeah. I would add to that possibly on hold projects, you know, all of those day-to-day actions and items on to-do lists or next actions that we're working on, how they relate to current projects.
Yeah. And, you know, we're talking about getting perspective. And one of the things that I've found with projects is that it's so great to get control of your projects. You feel like, okay, I've organized all my actions into these projects, so I know what I'm doing. But there's actually a huge amount of perspective that you can gain if you think carefully about your projects. And David Allen talks about the natural project planning model, which, you know, there's actually this, we could almost do a whole discussion about that. So I won't go into it in too much detail. But essentially, you know, the more that you're able to be conscious about what the purpose of a project is, what success is going to look like in the project, and what all the associated things are to do with the project, the more you can make sure that rather than just doing stuff because you've got a project, the project is actually meaningful to you. Mm-hmm. And so I find that it's very helpful. For example, I do things like I do a mind map when I have a big project, and I get out of my head all the things related to the project so that I know where I'm going. Because sometimes you name a project and you think you know by naming it what the successful outcome is going to be, but you're actually just sort of doing work around something without being clear in your own mind about what the outcome is. At least that's my experience. So I've found the bigger the project, the more it pays off to really think about what the purpose of the project is and to go through the different stages of the natural project planning model.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you say that because I feel like these first two levels, actions and then up to projects, because I was so disorganized when I began using GTD in my life, when it comes to perspective, this was as high as I ever went, you know, understanding how actions related to projects. And I think there were some fleeting thoughts of the higher altitudes. It's always been like the purpose of what I'm doing, I have one, you know, like I think I could articulate it. I mean, now I can definitely articulate it. But since I was introduced to GTD, before and immediately after starting to use Getting Things Done, it was quite nebulous, you know, like what the 1 to 2 year goals were or what a 3 to 5 year vision was for this project, which is now my work. I mean, I talked in the recent shows about how the School Sucks project was originally for me a kind of hobby that was meeting a need basically for venting. It was a kind of talk therapy that I was doing with myself and recording, you know, to basically have an outlet for a lot of the frustrating experiences that I was having in and around schooling. So I kind of backed into this as a career, and I really admire, and I have to admit, kind of envy people who start projects like this with a clear vision or overarching purpose in mind, because I really don't believe that I did. And once it became such a big project that it basically had to command all of my work time every week, that was kind of a wake up that I need to think more seriously about the whys of what I'm doing and the long-term implications of that.
And what I would say to that is that actually it's a really healthy process to find your purpose from the bottom up, right? To do it the way that you're doing it, where, you know, you get control of all of the crap that's going on the day-to-day level, and then work your way up to successively higher understanding of, like, okay, where am I going in life? What is this all for? Because the difficulty is, I mean, it's great to have vision, and we're going to talk about that, but the difficulty is if you sit alone and decide great visions for yourself and they're totally abstracted from your everyday life, then how on earth do you get from where you are now to where that vision is?
Yeah,
and that can be really difficult. So I understand what you're saying about that romantic vision of, like, okay, I wake up one morning and decide this will be the way, and then I create a project, and then I, you know, implement, and then it's done. Actually, a lot of the time, some of our highest visions and goals and purpose in life can be things that we discover through the doing of what we're doing and through becoming more conscious by doing it. You know, you have started School Sucks because it was meaningful to you. And over time, it becomes clearer. Okay, why am I doing this? What is it that's so important about this for me? And that's something that you can discover through the doing. And this perspective of the sort of higher areas of responsibility and horizons of focus, this gives you a way to discover that purpose from the bottom up.
Yeah. You know, well, it relates to this too. I don't have any new age music queued up to play in the background, which would be fitting here, maybe for in some people's minds. But do you believe in a kind of genius of the subconscious? I was pondering this at the end of the first episode in this series, how sometimes there'll be this flash of an idea, and you know, like this voice that says, "Go do this thing," and you don't really know why. I mean, it relates to what you're doing generally, or what I'm doing generally. It fits in. It's a School Sucks project, but it seems very impulsive. But then as time goes by, I say, oh, okay, I know exactly how that fits into the bigger picture here, but I didn't see it when I started. So it's kind of a similar idea, right? There's probably some need that we might be aware of on a very, very subtle level. An action sort of appears to us And then later, if we have not just a system for organization and kind of self-monitoring, but also larger goals, a larger philosophy, you know, like a philosophy that guides our lives, like the philosophy of liberty does, you say, oh, okay, well, because my life is mapped in all of these other ways, I see how that fits onto this landscape. Does that make sense?
Totally. And I think the really amazing thing about the unconscious mind is that the important thing is to free it, to give you that intuition and creativity, because and this is what GTD or productivity systems in general are all about, is that if you get control over the everyday crap in your life, then your unconscious mind doesn't have to be worrying about whether or not, you know, you've got bills to pay or you've got meetings that you haven't put in your diary and this kind of stuff. Your unconscious mind can be free to be creative. Whereas if you don't have control, then your unconscious mind is all tangled up with all of this mundane crap that gets in the way. And so this is really, I think, the amazing thing about this is that if you get some structure and have a system for both gaining control and gaining perspective, then you can really benefit from allowing your unconscious mind the freedom to give you all of the great creative benefits that it does. And this shows up in so many ways. You know, when you have a system to think about what your goals are in life, what your vision for your life is, then there's a system which is also feeding your unconscious mind hints. And this, you know, processing goes on in the background. You go to sleep and you wake up and you have new ideas about it because you've thought about it and because you've given your unconscious mind, you know, something to work with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And that is, in this metaphor, the clearing the debris off the runway, I think, the language he uses. You know, it's very hard to go anywhere where you don't even have, you know, a clear path to move forward. And that's what it felt like a lot of the time, is that there was always something else that just had to be done. Importance was determined by urgency, you know, which is a complete lack of perspective. So from there, we can go to 20,000 feet, which is called areas of responsibilities. And I'm interested in how you would relate the second level, current projects, to the third level, areas of responsibility.
Well, this is where you really start to get some perspective in life, because the areas, and this for me was when I started GTD, it was very much like the way that you've described. I started by trying to clear the runway and get control of all of the responsibilities and projects in my life. And then slowly I wanted to really get a handle on this perspective side and find a way to use that for myself. And it took some time, but the more I did, the more time and effort I devoted to it, the more I got out of it. And the next level, which is called areas of responsibility or areas of focus, that level is where you start to look at your whole life and you start to say, okay, I've got all these projects, but what do these projects relate to in terms of my life, in terms of my responsibilities in life? And so as an example, you can think of your life and you can think of it in terms of the different areas of responsibility that you have. For example, I have a responsibility to myself towards my finances. So that's an area of life, right? Money. And I have, this is not going away. I'm going to have this responsibility all the way through my life. And I have a responsibility towards my health. That's another area of my life. I also have a responsibility in terms of my relationship with my wife. That's another area. And of course, there's all the work responsibilities. So I have a responsibility in terms of my writing, the books that I write, and my podcast. And it's up to you to decide how to define these areas of responsibility. But the key to think about it is this. You've got all these projects that you've done. You've realized, oh, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. And these actions, you've organized them into projects. And then all of those projects should fit into one area of responsibility or another. So in other words, there's a many-to-one relationship between projects and areas of responsibility. So you're going to have lots and lots of projects related to your finances. Or, well, maybe not lots, but you're going to have a number of projects related to your finances. And then you have this area called finances or money. And then you're going to have other projects related to your health. And that's all related to this area called health. And once you start doing that, it allows you to look at your life and think about all the facets of your life, because they're all important and they all will take up mental headspace. And the real problem that a lot of people get into is they get great at their business, for example.
Right.
And then their personal life is a total disaster.
Yeah.
Because they've never thought about what the hell they're doing in their relationship or what the hell they're doing with money or and so on and so forth. Or it can be the other way around. You know, you can have people who are very good at one area of life. They're very dedicated to their personal hobby or whatever, but they're not thinking about, you know, what they're trying to do in terms of their finances and so forth. So this is a way of taking your life and thinking about it in terms of the different areas of responsibility that are meaningful to you. And that gives you a huge amount of perspective, because the moment you do that, then what I do is every time I go through my weekly review, I also look at my areas of responsibility. So I look at my, for example, my finances, and I look at the projects that I've got, and I think, what's missing when it comes to my finances? You know, what is in here that shouldn't be in here anymore, and what's not in there that I need? What is a project that I haven't identified to do with that? And I think about the same in terms of my relationship, and the same in terms of my podcast, same in terms of my writing, and all of the other areas of responsibility that I've identified. And what that immediately does is it gets you to look at your life and to look at the different areas of your life and to be aware of what your current responsibilities are, what your goals in that particular area are, and, you know, where you're at in every facet of your life. And that, I think, is a huge step towards greater integrity, which we'll talk about more when we come onto the higher levels. But, you know, just being aware and being conscious of what you're trying to do in each of these areas of your life. I actually have an Evernote note for each of these areas of responsibility, and I have done a mind map for each of them, thinking about, okay, what do I want from my finances? What do I want from my health? What do I want from my relationship? What is important to me? What are my values? What am I, you know, what are all of the responsibilities associated with this area? And it's a really great way of being conscious of the different aspects of your life.
Yeah, I was going to ask how you actually map this visually. And I was actually starting to contemplate if there was a way to model it using a program like Evernote. I mean, my Evernote is basically set up going through the five steps that he talks about, which is more in the getting control aspect of getting things done. I think what else is a big part of this level is lifestyle balance. You know, you're talking about that a little bit, but to make sure that our little eggs are distributed the best they can be through all of our baskets. And I think many people in the audience, definitely myself included, and maybe you as well, Jake, know what life looks like when all the eggs have been placed in one basket. Or too many in one basket. I know I've definitely had that experience with work. In fact, in one of my real personal goals for 2015, for last year, was achieving a better lifestyle balance. You know, I talked on the show before about being kind of a hermit. I talk a lot about my devotion to health and fitness, but there was only, so much productive work output that would fit seemingly into a lifestyle with those priorities. You know, reducing my amount of time spent as a hermit and trying to go out and engage with more people in more positive social situations, that was checked off last year and had some very, very positive results. But, you know, having a richer and fuller social life cuts down on work productivity, it seems. You know, so it always seems like there's this balancing act that needs to be done. And I'm happy I made those changes last year, but I did also see the productive output related to, you know, podcasts and videos and listener engagement drop off because of that. But I'll take that over having not worked on lifestyle balance, because I think that in the past, the way that I worked wound up being very, very costly in other areas of my life, especially when I was working in and around the schools, and a big one was health, you know, in the early days of my career. That really, really suffered, mental and physical, because of, so much energy having to go into work, 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 work. And I think a lot of people can probably identify with that.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, you will certainly, by mapping this out, identify things that make you more conscious about areas of your life that have been less, that you paid less attention to, and areas of your life that you paid way more attention to. That's what I found. And in particular, when I first started doing this, I was in the process of building up my business and, looking towards selling my business. Eventually, I was way concentrated on work. And that was, very much the focus of my life. And it did make me way more conscious of like, okay, well, what's happening in my personal life? You know, what is my relationship like? What are my friendships like? What's my relationship with my family like? What's all of these other things, which I realized that had just been very unconscious for a long time. And there was a lot of things that changed for me when I became more conscious of that. But I would say that before you sort of jump into thinking like, oh, I've got to change this, I've got to change that, the first step is just actually mapping your life and the different responsibilities that you have and being conscious of them, because that in itself is a really important way of gaining more perspective on what's going on. And, so just looking at all your projects and looking at what area of responsibility they belong to and naming those areas of responsibility for yourself, and being able to then regularly, go through and review, okay, I've got my relationship, I've got my health, I've got my finances, I've got this, I've got that, and go through and look through all the different aspects of your life so that you have been conscious of what you're doing. That in itself gives you so much perspective that it really frees up your mind. Because you know that in those times in life when I have neglected different parts of my life, it's not like they go away. And it's not like problems don't appear.
Right,
it's
just that right.
They're still there. And I still, if I'm not paying attention to my relationship or my friendships, whatever, it's not like those things go away. But it's just then, the problems come up and I haven't been conscious about it. And this is a way of actually being conscious of what's going on.
Indeed. I really like that phrase, life mapping, right? It was decided long ago that a great way to get from one place to another was to have a map of where you are, right?
Yeah.
I wanted to mention this to you and anybody else who might have a similar lifestyle. If you move, one of the how do you feel about dry erase boards before I go any further with this suggestion?
They're great, but they're big and difficult to move around. So.
I found the best thing that you could buy on Amazon. I actually just added one to my wish list, but I wouldn't mind having 10 of them. It is a dry erase material that rolls up like a poster.
Oh, yeah?
And they are huge. So the one that I'm looking at is 2 feet high and 10 feet long. And for me, while putting things into Evernote has its place and has its function, sometimes I think there are things that should be written down by hand. Obviously, we actually talked about journaling and I said I like to handwrite. I think you said you do it, you type it, right?
Digitally.
Yeah. But being able to draw out maps on a dry erase scape of that size is very, very appealing to me. So anybody who moves around a lot and sees that problem that you identified with these giant dry erase boards, I had to leave a wall-sized one behind once, unfortunately, because I got a new tenant to agree to take it once I explained all the benefits of having a wall-sized dry erase board. I wish I had taken it with me, but there was no way to move it. And so this is a solution, the roll-up dry erase surface for people who want to do that.
Awesome. And do you do mind maps on that? Have you got into that?
Most of my mind mapping was done, Jake, when I lived with the room of dry erase walls.
Right.
I would do a lot of mind mapping then, but I really haven't found a mind mapping tool that I'm really comfortable using that is as fast as pen and paper for me.
Well, you can totally do it on pen and paper
and
on your roll-up erase board. I personally like using a digital tool, but the tool doesn't matter. The key thing is that the real tool is just drawing the map. And when we're talking about areas of focus, that can be a good way to get your thinking going on it, is just do a mind map.
Mm-hmm.
About your areas of responsibility. And then, so yourself in the middle, and then you draw a line off and you start naming these areas of responsibility. as a spider diagram off from the middle. And then, you know, from each of those areas of responsibility, you can then have sub points in the graph to show you the different projects that you've got at the moment, just to think about it in those terms. I actually organize this myself within my task management app. So I have folders for each of the areas of responsibility, and within those folders sit all the projects. And each of those folders has a linked Evernote area of responsibility page, which I've then written, you know, all about it for myself and done my own notes and done a mind map and so forth for each individual one. But I find mind mapping to be a very helpful tool when you want to get perspective on anything, whether it's to do with planning a project or whether it's to do with trying to map out the areas of responsibility in your life.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's funny that you, through using Evernote, I actually eventually, as I tried to update and improve the system, it's kind of intuitive, right? So I have under, you know, I have an inbox and then I have next actions where I basically store all my to-do lists of individual aspects of projects. And then I have a section called current projects, which is the things that I'm working on right now. And then another section, current projects on hold, and then another one called personal pursuits. So this was my attempt, without fully understanding it, at basically defining areas of responsibility. It's not nuanced enough if it only has work projects and personal pursuits. But that I like that structure, whether it's done digitally or the mind map, I think is very useful because it is dry erase. If you want to go with my method, you start with yourself, you have your areas of responsibility around the self, and then you can spider off of each area of responsibility with the projects, you know, just as it's not a total organization system, but it's just, I think, a useful visualization that can be updated with dry erase markers and erasers.
Yeah, I've actually I've installed a customization on my OmniFocus task manager app where each week I can actually export all of my projects in their areas of focus as a mind map. So it will open in another app called iThoughts. So what I can do is I press a button and everything that's current in my system gets exported as an automatically generated mind map. And I'm able to then, you know, move it around and look at it, and it gives me a visualization of all of these areas of responsibility.
Wow.
So that's some of the things that you can do with the more advanced tools.
You are like in the future of productivity, as far as I'm concerned. What is the program that you use to do that?
It's called OmniFocus, and the mind mapping tool that I use is called iThoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And OmniFocus... there's a script. I can give you links to this for the show notes, but there's a script which exports your projects in OmniFocus in, I believe the format is OPML, which is a universal mind mapping format that a mind map app can understand. So I export the OPML and then just open it up, and then automatically I've got this multicolored mind map with everything generated.
Wow.
Yeah.
I could get into that.
Yeah, it's really helpful. And, you know, but this is, again, this is a very, very efficient way of doing it, but you can totally do that manually and, you know, get the same benefits of mapping out your life and thinking about the responsibilities. And just to come back to something that you said, when you have a division, which is like work and personal, I would say that is way too broad, because then underneath that, they can hide a lot of stuff that's not clear to you. What are you doing in personal? And that's true of work too. You know, maybe for a lot of people, especially if you have a business, you may have multiple areas of responsibility. You know, if you're an entrepreneur, then you might be responsible both for business development and also for, you know, the finances of the business. And it's really up to everyone to decide for themselves where it makes sense to draw the line in terms of breaking up your life into these different areas of responsibility. But you want to make sure that you define it so that things that really do, things that you do are represented somewhere. So if you have friends, then you have a friendship area of responsibility, you know, and it's not just personal, you know what I mean? And so that way you can be more conscious of all the different responsibilities in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I can open personal pursuits, and you're right. It doesn't really make much sense. I mean, inside it, it's diet, exercise, habit change, hobbies, ideas, mental health, which links to a bunch of other sections, relationships, using the Nikon D5000. Boy, that's an old one. Basically, my notes on how to use a digital camera. And then the current projects are things like the January productivity series, a self-employment course that we're looking into developing. So, there's definitely a better system for that. I think that the visuals that have been generated for me and hopefully for people in the audience based on this conversation so far are really helpful.
Yeah, cool. And, you know, the way to think about areas of responsibility is that a project, if you're dealing with something that's going to finish within the next year or so, it's probably a project. Mm-hmm. An area of responsibility is an ongoing thing in life, and they tend to be much longer lived. And there are things that will come and go, like, for example, or areas of responsibility can change. So, for example, if you don't have kids, you have no parenting area of responsibility. If then you have kids, then you've got a new area of responsibility in your life that wasn't there before, right? So they can change, but it's useful to think of them as the longer lived things than your projects. And of course, if you change your jobs, then your responsibilities will change too as well.
Yeah. So it would be in this format that I'm using, like Evernote, areas of responsibility would be a hierarchy, a notebook stack, as it's called.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Where individual notebooks for each project could exist underneath it. But
yeah. And in a mind map, the areas of responsibility would be right around, close in to you in the middle, and then springing off them would be all of these multiple projects for each one.
Yeah, and if you really had a lot of dry erase ink and space, you could even, just for the visualization, I'm not saying this is probably inefficient to do, but you could spider off again current projects, series of actions.
Yeah,
I wouldn't even recommend that, but
no,
you could.
In fact, I do. When I export my projects from OmniFocus, it does export everything, including the spider diagram. If you press plus on each bubble, it will open up and show you all the tasks associated with each project. But as you say, there's no point because you can't see anything at that stage. It's just this enormous head. So it doesn't make sense to visualize in those terms, but you can do it if you want.
Right, absolutely. So with areas of responsibility clarified, we can go to the next altitude, what David Allen calls 30,000 feet, 1 to 2 year goals. That's how he defines it. So I think we talked about that a little bit already, but yeah, you want to stick goals to things that can happen probably within the next year, and differentiated from a dream. We talked about differentiating goals and dreams in the previous goal shows this month, but something you probably have a realistic idea for how to get from here to there, right?
Yeah, exactly. And what I find is helpful is, as I said, if you take an area of responsibility and you look at all your current projects, then it's very easy to think, what is it that I'm thinking about that I haven't got captured here? And that can often be a good way of thinking about your goals. And not only that, but it can also be a good way of assessing how important goals are to you, because you can think, okay, let's look at my work responsibility in terms of my podcast or whatever. And then I have all of these current projects related to it. And then I may have some goals, you know, and you can easily see, wow, I've got all these goals. So which ones are really important to me and which ones actually am I not really committed to and should I think about removing, you know? So it can be a useful way by looking at your whole life in these terms of defining your goals. And so, for example, I have my projects in my OmniFocus, which are things that I'm actually currently working on, committed to, and goals, sometimes they immediately go into projects. But sometimes I also have slightly longer term, as you say, couple of year goals. And those live for me in a list in Evernote for each area of responsibility. And what I do at the beginning of the year is I look at all my goals and I think about which ones I want to take from my areas of responsibility and think about which ones are really important to me this year. And by doing that, it gives you a sense of all the goals that you have in your life so that you're not overcommitting to, you know, hundreds of different goals.
Yeah.
But you're actually thinking, okay, of all of these different goals in all these areas of responsibility in my life, what am I really focusing on? What are the few goals this year that really matter to me? And that is another good way of making sure that you've taken it into account. You don't have to spread your goals over lots of different things. You can focus them all on one part of your life if you want to, but at least you're doing it consciously.
Absolutely. You know, just to go back down a couple levels to a question that I've been asking myself, maybe in more stressful moments over the course of the last couple of years, quantifying. how many projects? So we're back down to 10,000 feet here just for a minute. How many projects should I really have going on at once? I think that also relates to questions as we go up a little bit. How many areas of responsibility? Is there a normal? Probably not. And maybe I could ask you to just, you don't have to share them one by one, but your life is divided into how many areas of responsibility? How many is mine divided into? And then as a result, how many actual 1 to 2 year goals can I be making whenever those goals are made? And I'm sure that, you know, this rolls throughout the year. Like, we don't make all our goals on January 1st. Obviously, I think the more efficient and the more comfortable you become with it, with a system like GTD, the more projects you could manage simultaneously. But as far as areas of responsibility and 1 to 2 year goals in numbers, do you have any general guidelines, or is that just way too broad and subjective?
Well, I would say the way to think about it for all of these things is, I think there are some guidelines, but there are also, I think you can also go the wrong way if you try and think like, well, I haven't got enough, so I should make some more, or you've got too many. I think the way to think about it is this. You should have the number of projects that it takes to get stuff out of your head so you stop worrying about it. That's what you need, right? So the determining fact is not, you know, do I have too many or too few? The determining fact is, have I got it out of my head? So you have to get everything out of your head into a project. Then when you look at all your projects, if you feel overwhelmed by all of the projects and you realize that you're not really committed to some of those projects, then you move them off into someday maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the thing that I do, is I take them out of my system and they just have a single page in Evernote. And I look through my list of someday maybe projects and I think, yeah, I'm not doing that today. I'm not doing that this week. I'm not doing that this month. And that's fine. And I just know maybe one day I'll do those things. Maybe I won't. And then oftentimes I also look at them and think, you know, that's never going to happen. I take it off the someday maybe list. But the way to think about whether you have too many projects you have enough projects is, have you got it all out of your head? That's the criteria that I think you have to use. As far as areas of focus is concerned, you need to have an area of focus for every area of your life where projects actually exist. So in other words, if you have a project, it should belong to an area of focus. And if you can't define it, then there's something missing there, you know, that you need to stick in, if you like. The one thing I do think it makes sense, and as I was saying, that should just reflect your own sense of where it makes sense to divide your life up into. The one thing I do think it makes sense to put a limit on is when you think about goals that are really important to you for a specific time period, like a year. I have found that it makes way more sense for me to think of, let's say, 3 or 4 goals maximum that I think, okay, this is really what this year is about. These are my big, hairy, audacious goals for this year. These are the things that are going to make a difference in my life. This is what matters, right? And that way, when you think about it in those terms, it's also very easy to say, is that a big, hairy, audacious goal? Is that something that's going to actually, you know, be awesome if I do it? No, it's not. So therefore, it doesn't belong on my list of just a few really important goals. And when you do it like that, they're exciting things that you can feel interested in. Whereas if you have a list of 20 goals, then, you know, it's very hard to get excited about that.
Yeah, enthusiasm is really diluted.
Yeah, exactly. And so I have a few goals that are really important to me. And then I have, within each area of focus, I have a list of things that I want to get done, but they're not like things that this year is directed towards me.
I gotcha. Now, a goal for, say, a year, it could be turned into one project, but there are goals that could actually be composed of 3 or 4 distinct projects, right?
Yes.
So like, they're just an example. If I wanted to, say, go from just under 10,000 subscribers on YouTube to 25,000 by the beginning of 2017, there are several aspects to that. And each one of those aspects is not a singular action. Like, coming up with the most efficient way to repost a audio podcast onto YouTube, coming up with a video series that could work on a weekly basis, coming up with a solution to live streaming so everything could be recorded and then moved to YouTube. I mean, that's like 3 very, very different projects with very, very little overlap. So a goal could, you know, be a series of projects that have to be completed throughout the year in furtherance or in the achievement of that goal.
Yeah, and this is where sometimes, you know, things can start to bloat and feel a little bit amorphous again. I find it's very helpful for my goals. I like to have goals that are really tangible, like write a book. Okay, I know what the outcome of that is going to be. There's going to be a book at the end of it, right?
Right.
But underneath that, there's a ton of stuff I've got to do. I've got to decide on what, you know, the overall direction of the book. Then I've got to write this chapter and that chapter, and I've got to go through the editing process. I need to get feedback from beta readers. There's a ton of sub-projects associated with writing a book. Even then, you know, publish a book. Okay, now I have to get the cover designed, and I have to get, you know, get it published on Amazon. And there's all these different sub-projects. So the way I find it is I like my goals to be at a level which I can really get my teeth into. I know what that is. And then I make sub-projects for each of those. And OmniFocus allows you to do that. Within each project, you can have like components of the project. And however, even if you do this on paper, it's worthwhile thinking of what are the different components of a project and what are the milestones and so forth. But my general approach is, try and make the goals things that you can get excited about. You know, it's hard to get excited about something really technical that's really a sub-project of a higher project, if you see what I mean. But if you know it's write a book, okay, that's something I can really get my teeth into. And chapter seven, and you know, or getting the editing done or whatever, these are sub-projects of that goal. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. This is also a great way to get projects done when you understand their parts. I know that sounds so obvious to some people and maybe to others, just the breakthrough that they were looking for. But yeah, we can wind up with lots of projects without really any clear understanding of why they're being done sometimes. But if, you know, you have this goal, that goal, even if the full goal, let's say, is not ultimately achieved, just to go back to the example I used before, if I somehow end 2016 with 18,576 YouTube subscribers, I've still made significant headway in the form of the completion of multiple supporting projects. I know a lot more about live streaming to YouTube. I've tested a way to make a successful ongoing video series. Yeah. So even if I miss the mark, ultimately, and you know, having ambitious goals is really important too, because that's part of what makes them compelling. That's part of what gets us moving through next actions towards the completion of sub-projects. So it's okay. I mean, I think, you know, one of my apprehensions about setting really ambitious goals is the fear of failing, you know, especially in this. I was saying to Nathan Frazier, my previous guest on this topic, failing in this case in a really public way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's just you can achieve so much without reaching that final goal that it is important to also be aware of that and to celebrate the progress that you do make on things, too.
Absolutely.
So I think that's an important part of this is to realize that when you, especially if you're setting a goal, because the goal that you just described is a goal that isn't within your direct action to do. It requires other people to subscribe to your YouTube channel. So there's always going to be that question of like, okay, well, I can do what I can do, but that I need other people to do things too. So you can really focus on what you can achieve yourself and the actions that you can take to make that happen. And if you do all those things to the best of your ability, then, you know, you're achieving something, even if you don't finally reach the exact number that you'd hope for.
Indeed. Absolutely. So with 1 to 2 year goals clarified at 30,000 feet, we can go to the next altitude, 40,000 feet, what David Allen calls a 3 to 5 year vision.
Yeah. This is really, really interesting. And it took me a long time to understand what the point of this was and how it could help me in gaining more perspective and really in you know, directing my life to the greatest fulfillment. And I think the key for me, the key thing that I came to understand is that there's a difference between goals and visions. And that difference is important, and it's important to allow yourself to have visions, because visions are things that you don't know how to achieve. So for example, a goal, you have this goal, like the one you just described, getting more subscribers. You know, you just described a whole bunch of stuff that you're going to do to get more subscribers. You've got a fairly good idea of how it's going to work. You don't know exactly, and you know, you need to work it all out and so forth, but you have a fairly good idea. A vision is where you allow yourself to really dream big and think about what the awesome things are in life that, you know, would give you great fulfillment, even though you have no clue at this stage how you're going to get there and what it's going to be. And, you know, I, for example, I had a vision of building and selling a company and achieving financial independence. And when I had that vision, I had no clue all the steps that were going to be involved in doing it. I was blissfully ignorant of a lot of the stress and difficulty that would be involved in that. But it was an exciting vision. And it's also, it's got to be a vision that you believe is achievable, right? I mean, I could see that other people founding companies and they seem to be able to do it. And I was thinking, well, if they can do it, I can do it. So, you know, it's not that you create a vision, which is that, I don't know, you're going to go and visit other planets or something, which is clearly at this stage, you know, going to be a very hard task to achieve. But if you believe that it's in principle doable, but you don't know how to get there, then having a vision for what an awesome thing to do in life would be, when you do that, it gives you, and this comes back to what we're talking about with the unconscious, it gives your unconscious food to start thinking, well, how would that work? How would I build the company? How would I get to financial independence? What do I need to do? And you start moving all your mental resources and your creativity in that direction. And eventually, you know, that's how you achieve epic things with your life and get great fulfillment.
Einstein said something very similar about envisioning the end. You know, even if the end seems impossible, because maybe what the vision is so compelling that it creates a kind of gravity, you know, that will pull you towards it step by step. I feel like it was in The Secret. Sorry to reference The Secret, everybody, in the podcast, but I feel like there was a great line in The Secret. And this is a useful metaphor at some times in life and perhaps a very dangerous metaphor in other situations. But driving at night with the trust that the road will continue to unfold in front of you, you know, as you move forward. So this idea of envisioning the end and then kind of filling in the steps to get there, which probably go from very, you know, big achievements or milestones down to very small individual actions, that can be a real motivating force to start yeah. with the vision. And now, can you just relate this to what you said to me earlier, or maybe compare and contrast, where you said you feel like the way I did things with my work is fine to basically start from the bottom up?
Yeah. So basically, if you start with visions without having a clear idea of where you are, then you're kind of picking things out of the air. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing is to, If you do it the way that you're doing it, right? So you gain clarity about all of the responsibilities that you currently got. So first of all, that reduces your stress level and it opens up your creativity. And then you have all your projects and then you start thinking about your life in terms of the different responsibilities that you have, the areas of responsibility. And that gives you more of a 360-degree picture of your life and all of the things that you're doing. And then you start thinking about your goals within each of those areas. Then what I found is that my vision for my life, for different areas of my life, and I think about vision in terms of the different areas of my life, I found it much easier to ask myself those questions and to feel more emotionally committed to the answers and feel that they came more organically. I mean, I don't know, it sounds a bit hippy-dippy to say it like that, but that's actually how it worked for me. So for example, I'll give you an example. I told you earlier on about Hannah and I traveling and going to Mexico and spending time abroad. I have an area of responsibility, which is travel. It's very important to me in my life. And we love travel and we love to do that. And so when I think about in the past, when I thought about booking holidays and visiting people and stuff, I had this area of responsibility called travel. And at one point, I had my area of responsibility and I had all my individual projects and I was thinking it through and I was thinking about my vision for travel. And I thought about perpetual travel. I thought about becoming a perpetual traveler, living a lifestyle of permanent travel. And I just wrote that down. And I had no clue at the time. I knew immediately a part of my brain said, well, how are you going to get post? Well, what about your bank account? Well, what about this? Well, what about that? You know, and there was all of these issues that would present practical problems. And I had no clue about how to solve any of those things. But it felt to me like an exciting vision for life. It felt to me like that would be epic. You know, that would be an awesome way to live. This world is so beautiful and so amazing. I want to travel. I want to see more of it. I don't want to stay in one country. I want to see other places. And that vision, I mean, that was years ago. Like, I can't remember exactly when. It was probably about 3 or 4 years ago when I first wrote that down. That vision is now real because I had the vision, and now I slowly put the things in place and worked out how to resolve all of the technical issues. And I haven't resolved them all yet. There are still technical issues that I'm, you know, that I'm working through, but that's the way it evolved. And I feel like that was a very organic way for me to come to that, rather than just waking up one morning and thinking, okay, I need a vision. You know, how about traveling? You know what I mean? It came to me through the process of thinking about the different areas of my life and thinking, what would be epic? What would be really exciting for me in this area of life? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Could you talk briefly about maybe some of the tools or strategies you would use? Because I think this level is fairly intimidating to a lot of people. So tools or strategies that you've used to represent these visions in reality?
Yeah, absolutely. The tool I found most helpful is one that people call a vision board. And basically, there's no real rules about how you do this. Some people do this by cutting out pictures and putting pictures on a board. Frankly, that never really connected with me because I didn't like it. It just, I don't know, getting pictures from a magazine or something, it didn't really work for me. But that's how some people do it. They think about one area of their life and then they cut out pictures and that sort of give them creative inspiration. I found that I take a vision board as just being a blank piece of paper that I drew stuff on. And some of those things were words. And some of those things were pictures. Some of those things were sort of diagrams. I've also found mind mapping to be incredibly helpful in this. But, you know, it literally, at one point, I just wrote PT in the middle of the travel vision board. And that's how that happened for me. It wasn't a very exciting picture. Perpetual travel was something that just came to me almost in a flash like that. But the idea is you create vision boards where you free yourself to dream big, because the thing about getting things done is that because there's so much structure and you're very careful about thinking, okay, what's my next action? How is this going to work? You know, that's very much grounded in reality and where you are right now. This is a different exercise. It's giving you the freedom away from your day-to-day projects to take an area of your life, your relationships, your friendships, your finances, whatever it is, draw a board, and just do whatever you like. You might want to do a mind map. You might want to cut out pictures and put them on. You might want to draw things. This is what I did. I draw pictures. I draw words. And then see what emerges. Some people do this as one vision board for their life. Personally, I found that to be just a bit too abstract, you know, like all of life in one vision board. I find it easier to think of my life in terms of the areas of responsibilities because I already have that organic process going. But the quote that I love about this is the Henry David Thoreau quote, which is, do not worry if you've built your castles in the air. They are where they should be. Now put the foundations under them. So that's what you're doing. You're building your vision, which you don't yet know how the foundations are going to get to it, but you build a vision first and then you take it from there.
But that relates. Okay. So very interesting. Many ideas come to mind. I will try to now speak them based on what you just said. All right. So I mentioned The Secret before, and this is where a lot of people kind of from the conversations that I had about, you know, that whole process or that whole mystical approach through the years, more than one person said, yeah, I checked out when they talked about I put a picture of a house on a piece of paper, and then years later, I lived in that house. But to relate that to the Thoreau quote that you just used, a vision board isn't something that exists on its own, right? This is the fifth level in, you know, yeah, a six-level system. And if those four levels are built underneath it, the vision board becomes much more of a practical tool, because there's a method for essentially how to achieve that vision. There's no magic, there's method.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a way of you inspiring yourself so that your creativity, your practical skills, and all of your abilities that you're every day working on in your productivity system and thinking through all the practical steps, this is a way of you inspiring yourself to, as to where to take that. So that rather than just clearing your email inbox every day, you know, you're actually working towards something in the future that's going to be epic. Because, you know, you can use GTD to clear your inbox every day. Well, so what? You know, that, like, you're not going to get to the end of your life and say, thank God I got to inbox zero. You know, that's I'm so pleased that I managed to clear my inbox. You clear your inbox, it's so that you can move forward towards the exciting things. And you can only move forward towards exciting things if you allow yourself to dream big. And the difference with The Secret is that I think people, I don't know all the details about The Secret, but as far as I understand it, it's like, oh, you know, I'm going to draw something and then the universe is going to provide it for me.
Indeed.
And no, what's going to happen is I'm going to draw something and then I'm going to make that fucking happen. You know, I'm actually going to do what it takes to get me to where I want to go. It's you that's going to make it happen. But you're not going to be alert to the opportunities and to the, you know, the possibilities unless you're actually thinking that, unless you have that vision in mind.
Absolutely. Yeah. And from vision, we can ascend to the top level. In David Allen's metaphor, it's 50,000 feet and it is called purpose.
Yes. I mean, this is really a toughie. It took me a long time to work out how to think about my purpose in life and how to work towards living my purpose and actually embodying that in everything that you do. You know, this is a weird idea. What if you have a purpose, it should be embodied in everything that you do, your work, your home life, you know, your health and so on and so forth. And so like before, I found it much more fruitful to work organically up towards purpose by having sorted out all of the stuff at the lower levels. I have had insights and about my purpose in life beforehand, but doing it this way, I think, is a very healthy way of doing it, because it means that you are conscious of your purpose in life in a much more organic way. And purpose for me, I mean, it's going to be very different for different people. And I don't want this to be about, you know, people should have the same purpose in life as I do. I have words for me that embody what my life is about and what I'm, you know, what I consider to be my purpose. The way that I did that is that I looked at my areas of focus in my life, my areas of responsibility, all of the different aspects of my life, my relationship, health, you know, writing books and so on and so forth. I looked at all the projects that I was doing and I looked at my goals and I looked at my vision for each of these areas of responsibility. And I basically said to myself, well, what is common? What is it that I am trying to achieve in, you know, in my friendships, that I'm also trying to achieve in my finances, that I'm also trying to achieve in this other area of my life and so forth. And that way, I was able to identify my purpose through seeing, like, well, what am I actually revealing in the way that I live and in my goals and what I'm trying to do. So I'll give you one example. One thing that came out of that process for me was the idea of being conscious, of gaining transparency in each area of my life. And the way that that came up is that I looked at, you know, my finances and I realized I'm doing all this work to really understand my finances and to make sure that I track what's going on and so that I'm really aware of that. And in my health, I'm doing all this work to track my steps that I walk each day and track my exercises. And I you know, have various ways of getting data about how much exercise I'm doing and so forth. And so I thought, like, okay, well, clearly this is something that's really important to me. Why is it important? Because I want to live consciously, because I want to be awake for the ride, because life is so exciting and amazing. I don't want to get to the end of it and realize that I just did a bunch of stuff without even really being aware of it. You know, I want to be conscious and make choices rather than just, you know, go through life unconsciously. And when I did that, what that allowed me to do was to say, okay, well, am I consistent? Am I really looking to be conscious in all the areas of my life? And when you do that, it gives you an opportunity to identify those areas in life where you can either think, okay, this is definitely important to me, but I lack integrity because I don't yet have transparency in this area of my life. Or you can say, well, you know, I don't yet have transparency, or whatever the word is for you. And frankly, I don't particularly care about it. So it's obviously not a core purpose. I just, for whatever reason, it's something that's important in one area, but it's not something that I define as my purpose. So for me, it was a chance for me to say, okay, well, how transparent am I with myself about these areas of my life? And how can I have greater integrity and really live my purpose in all areas of my life? And that to me is what integrity is all about. You know, this is the difference between those people who they say that they're all about fighting against exploitation in the political sphere, and then they treat their friends and family like shit, you know, and they behave very badly in their personal lives. Clearly, then that isn't something that is a core purpose for them, because it doesn't actually, it's not embodied in every step that they take in life. Or as another example, you know, you can have people who are very interested in freedom and talking about liberty, and then they have personal lives where they're clearly totally unfree. And so, you know, it's clear that it's not a core value. It's not a purpose for them. It's just more of an intellectual game, because they're not applying it across their whole lives. And so this is the way that I found purpose, is to look at what I do, look at what's important to me, and really challenge myself. Okay, if this is a value, how can I embody it in every aspect of my life? And how can I, you know, how can I address any gaps in my integrity so that I really do live my purpose?
Yeah, truly living consciously is also a kind of great beginning to meeting a lot of other needs. You know, that is the first pillar of the six in the six pillars of self-esteem. And, you know, I would put self-knowledge there for myself as well, to live consistently with reality. We've talked a lot to get to this level and to think about it as a kind of starting point. Right. But there's even more enriching experience to be had moving forward from here. What in this model that we're using is the highest level, right? Because that creates all kinds of other beneficial opportunities as well.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, and I have, so that's one of the things that I have at my purpose level. And I have some other things that are important to me too. But everyone needs to find their own words. I know, I knew that would resonate with you, because we've talked about self-knowledge and living consciously before. So I know that's something that's really powerful for you too, Brett. But everyone needs to find their own way of identifying what their real purpose in life is. And when you find it yourself, you will be emotionally attached to it, and you will actually want to live it. And that in itself is deeply fulfilling. You know, finding ways to become truer to your purpose is a deeply fulfilling pursuit in itself.
Yeah. And in closing, Jake, that is a great challenge, right? When you're confronted with examining what exists on that level, kind of this question of why am I on this planet, and maybe what brings everything together. So that was why I found, I listened to your podcast on this topic, and I found that to be such a compelling life purpose. To know oneself as best as possible. But you're absolutely right. There's endless possibilities for what somebody could define for his or herself at that level.
Yeah.
We have a lot more to talk about, but I think that's a great place to wrap up for today. I really appreciate you coming on and adding all that value and sharing your wisdom, Jake. I think this is a really exciting journey once you start to view the altitudes above current projects, and you start to see where an understanding of each one of these levels could ultimately take you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the key thing is to make this your own process. I have found so much inspiration in the concepts that David Allen put forward with these horizons of focus, but everyone needs to adapt it for themselves and find their own way to make this something that they feel real ownership about and tweak it in a way that works for you. And so I'm very much a fan of using this as a springboard and then adapting these things for yourself. So some of the things that I've talked about may not be like super in alignment with the kind of classic GTD model, but I think you can use that as a good springboard and then find your own way to do this. And when you do, for me, this is the most helpful thing that GTD does, is to allow you to gain perspective on life and actually point yourself in the right direction, in a direction that's going to give you greater fulfillment and greater freedom.
Absolutely. Well said. Jake, thanks again so much. Can you give your website for my audience and maybe a few suggestions for topics they might want to check out there if they're interested in what we're doing this month on productivity?
Yeah, sure. My website is thevoluntarylife.com. In the podcast is about entrepreneurship, financial independence, and freedom. But because for all of those things, you really, productivity is so central to gaining more freedom in life, to entrepreneurship, and to financial independence, that I talk about productivity a lot. And I have shows specifically about productivity, so we'll put a link in the show notes for a list of all those shows, and then anyone who's interested can see them.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to talking to you again soon. Have a great weekend in Panama.
Thanks, Brett. You too. Cheers.
Was a fool to waste my time just searching my mind. But the more I find, the more I find the time to search. Used to ride to get to where I was going. Stop and go a long way.
New subscriber, geography, trivia. He just saw your person's name and then tell a fact about where they live.
What is a touch hole, you ask? It is time for trivia. Today's new subscriber is Paul I. from Whitehaven. Whitehaven is a small town and port in the county of Cumbria in England. One of Whitehaven's notable residents was American Revolutionary War naval hero John Paul Jones. So what gives? First of all, John Paul Jones wasn't an American. He was Scottish. You see, John Paul started his maritime career at the age of 13, sailing out of Whitehaven as an apprentice aboard a ship called the Friendship. And for years after that, young John sailed aboard a number of British merchant and slave ships, including the King George in 1764 as the third mate, and the Two Friends as first mate a couple of years later. It's also worth pointing out that John Paul's older brother, William Paul, had married and settled in the colonies, Fredericksburg, Virginia, and that was the destination of many of John Paul's voyages. In 1768, young John Paul's career was quickly advanced when both the captain and the first mate of a brig he was on called John died suddenly of yellow fever. John managed to navigate the ship back to a safe port, and in a reward, the Scottish owners of the vessels made him the master of the ship and its crew and gave him 10% of the cargo. He was then charged with leading voyages to the West Indies. On the second of the two voyages, he gets in trouble for beating up one of his crew members, and in an effort to avoid the Admiral's Court, he decided to flee to and settle in Fredericksburg, where his brother lived. After about a decade spent in the colonies, John Paul Jones had become very sympathetic to the cause of American independence. And in the late spring of 1777, he was assigned to the command of the newly constructed USS Ranger. While his initial missions were to France in 1778, he soon found himself headed for Britain. And in April of that year, he persuaded his crew to participate in an assault
on Whitehaven, the very place where his naval career had begun.
Now the pupil has become the master, John Paul hoped to himself.
Jones led the assault with two boats of 15 men just after midnight, with the plan to set fire to and sink all Whitehaven's ships anchored in the harbor, somewhere between 200 and 400 vessels. Jones found himself frustrated when it was difficult to set boats in the harbor on fire because the lanterns in both attack vessels had run out of fuel. A small crew had been sent ahead to light more fires on the shore in hopes of further terrorizing the townspeople, but they decided to go to a pub and have a drink instead. Also frustrating for Jones, one of his crew had slipped away to alert residents on a harborside street what was happening. A fire alert was sounded, and large numbers of people came running, forcing the Americans, including John Paul Jones, to retreat. The next move for the Whitehaven residents was to sink John Paul Jones's boats as they fled from the harbor, using many of the cannons that they had on the shore. But Jones had sent a crew ahead to spike the guns. Spiking a gun was a method of temporarily disabling a cannon by hammering a barbed steel spike into the touch hole. What is a touch hole, you ask? A touch hole is a kind of vent through which the propellant charge of a cannon or a muzzle-loading gun is ignited. In artillery, priming powder, a fuse, squib, or a friction igniter is inserted into the touch hole to ensure ignition of the charge. When a gun is spiked, the touch hole is sealed off, and the spikes are incredibly difficult to remove. If a cannon was ever in danger of being captured by the enemy, its crew would spike the gun to prevent it from being used against them. Captured guns would also be spiked if they could not be hauled away and the gun's recapture seemed likely. But here in the harbor of Whitehaven, we have a special case. A covert mission to spike enemy guns in enemy hands for the purpose of preventing counterattacks. Clever, courageous, Jones.
Put that in your touch hole and try to get a flintlock mechanism in there, if you know what I mean.
New subscriber geography trivia.